You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. For many of us, the closest we'll ever come to DNA analysis is through an ancestry site like 23andMe or skewed through the lens of a true crime television show or podcast. If you've ever been curious about the actual science behind forensics and how it's changed since it was first introduced, the Davis Science Cafe is the place to be tonight. Professor Ashley Hall is the director of the Forensic Science Graduate Program at UC Davis and is this month's guest speaker at 5:30 p.m. tonight at G Street Wonder Bar in downtown Davis. Dr. Hall, welcome to Insight. Thanks for taking the time.
Hi, Vicky. Thank you.
So you're joining us via Zoom in your office. You have quite the assortment of skulls behind you, and you're drinking out of a Dia de los Muertos mug. So I want to start with you. How did you get so interested in forensic science?
Well, I did my undergrad, and I just absolutely loved the science. I always had an interest in law. Actually, I was planning to be a lawyer before I fell in love with science. And after undergrad, I took a year off and just poked around, and forensic science came in front of me. And once I started, I haven't stopped.
What do you find so fascinating about it?
Well, first and foremost, I love the science. I love the genetics. I love the molecular biology. But it's like putting together a puzzle. So we have to figure out different ways to do things. There's no standard way. In the research world, there's no standard way to do it. So it's like putting together a puzzle.
When you watch, or if you watch shows like CSI, Law and Order, Bones, can you watch these shows, or are you kind of yelling at the TV screen as you're watching them?
I don't watch them very often. When I do, I take it purely for entertainment purposes.
Because I would think a lot of people who think of forensic science, of course, think of those shows or even true crime. But what exactly is the work of forensic science, and how has that evolved over the decades?
Forensic science is simply science in service of the law. The forensic scientist gives a voice to physical evidence. We are here to collect, analyze, interpret the evidence, and then present it to the jury. Let me start with a disclaimer, though. My views and opinions are my own. They are not necessarily the opinions of any other people or organizations. So forensic science has changed quite a bit over the years. It first was introduced in the mid-80s. It made its way into the United States in the early 90s. We were just in the early days. In the early days, it wasn't as sensitive as it is now. We didn't understand the techniques. We didn't have the strict quality assurance procedures in place that we have now. So we have gotten much better at collecting evidence. We've gotten better at looking at evidence, looking at smaller and smaller quantities of evidence, and we've gotten better at presenting it.
You know, it's relatively new when we're talking about science. It's only about 30 years in the United States, and you mentioned how much it's evolved in that time. In the early days, was it controversial when it was first introduced?
Oh, yes, it was very controversial. It wasn't very well understood, and there were many questions around the issues of privacy. So it took a lot of evidentiary hearings, court cases, battles between lawyers to bring forensic science to where it is today.
I think in the beginning, it must have been kind of hard to visualize what DNA analysis was, and that perhaps led to that controversy or maybe even not really understanding what it entailed.
Yes, yes. In the early days, when it was first being introduced, people didn't really know what to do with it. I mean, we didn't have the years of experience in it, understanding and explaining and all of the hearings and the fine tuning that had happened over the years. So in the beginning, people really didn't know what to do with it.
What are some of the misconceptions that you come across when it comes to DNA analysis or just forensic science?
Yeah, well, there is the CSI effect. That is, juries expect to see in real life what they see on TV. Now, we cannot do everything that they show on TV. That is more aspirational, right? One day we'll get there. It's just not today. It doesn't happen as quickly. It's not as neat and tidy. A crime scene is not a pleasant, well-lit place to be. The way that evidence is looked at, it's not as quick. It's not run an assay, have an answer, identify a suspect, arrest them all in a short period of time. There is much more process to it. There are much more, many more controls. You have a number of people looking at evidence. It's not just one person in some sort of aha moment.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that forensic science and DNA analysis is in service of the law. Once you're in the courtroom, how is this evidence and this science presented to a jury in a way that a layperson can understand?
Well, that is something that takes practice and training. In fact, it is the part of any analyst training procedure to do a moot court where they have to go and present. It is not easy to do because you have the language, you have the acronyms, the things that you use on a daily basis that are just not well known and not understood by a non-scientist. And so you have to work at being able to explain things in a way that jurors can understand.
Hmm. Do you enjoy that process, getting in a courtroom?
Well, I don't typically have to go and testify because I'm a research scientist. We are the support team for the analysts who are on the front line. So our job is to develop new techniques, develop new knowledge that gives them the absolute best and most up-to-date tools that there can possibly be.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with UC Davis professor Ashley Hall, who will be talking about DNA analysis and forensics at tonight's Davis Science Cafe at the Dree Street Wonder Bar. It is happening at 5:30 p.m. Okay, so you're going to be talking about the research that you do. You're going to have a very attentive and interested crowd. What are you hoping to convey to the audience outside of an academic setting?
I think what forensic science is, what we do for real, how we've grown, how we are constantly growing, how much effort is put into it, and what care we take in presenting evidence, developing evidence and presenting evidence.
You are going to be starting with the O.J. Simpson trial, the early days of DNA.
Yes.
That was in the 90s.
Yes.
What would you like people to know about the limitations back then?
Well, one of the main limitations in the OJ case was dealing with mixed samples, that is, samples that had more than one donor. In fact, one of the major samples at question was a three-person mixture. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how we looked at mixtures back then and how maybe in that case it led to not the right answer.
You're also going to talk about the Golden State Killer case.
Yes.
I covered that trial from start to finish as
yes.
a reporter. And a big focus and also a game changer was genealogy. How
yes.
does genealogy connect to analyzing DNA? Because this was just really like that first big case that mm-hmm. led to it being solved, a cold case. But mm-hmm. since then has actually led to other cases being solved and convictions as well.
Yes, yes. We have also grown in our use of genealogy. It develops investigative tools for police that then follow up. So genealogy in itself is not all of the DNA evidence. It's just used as an investigative tool to help the investigation along.
Genealogy can also make people feel a little bit uncomfortable, you know, especially when we first started to learn about it with privacy. How do you navigate that as a researcher? Because there are benefits to using genealogy, but then there mm-hmm. are concerns about maybe it being weaponized or exploited.
Mm-hmm, right. So around any human samples, there are a strict set of guidelines. And in fact, we have to get approval from something called the Institutional Review Board before we can even look at a human sample. So there is documentation, there are rules, there are guidelines. As researchers, we respect our human subjects greatly. We respect their privacy above all else.
In this specific case, when you learned about the use of genealogy as a forensic geek and researcher, like, was that exciting for you, like following along?
Yes. Oh, it was amazing. So this is born out of one of our new tools. It's called massively parallel sequencing, also sometimes called next-gen sequencing. We can generate mass amounts of DNA data that we have never been able to see before. And that's allowing us to do things like genealogy. So just the fact that we can take crime scene evidence and follow a family tree and develop suspects is absolutely amazing to me.
Yeah. Remind us how they were able to find Joseph DeAngelo through genealogy.
Right. They they had DNA evidence from the crime scenes, but they weren't able to match it to anybody in the National DNA database because he wasn't there. So they went to a company called GEDmatch. They submitted that sample, and they were able to get potential relatives from that sample because your DNA is more similar to a relative's DNA than to a random person. And so with that information, they built a family tree until they came back and found a series of suspects who were right place, right age. Then the police took over. They followed, in this case, Joseph D'Angelo, and collected a surreptitious DNA sample, right? They didn't want him to know that they were investigating him.
It was in his trash can outside of his home.
Yeah. And so they collected a sample, took it back to the lab, ran the profile, and they matched.
Hmm. So, I mean, what you just laid out, it's not just DNA, genealogy database, hey, we found someone. There's still a great deal of investigative work that still needs to happen.
Oh, yes, there is a good deal of work that has to be done. It is just an investigative lead.
Yeah, it's a tool in the toolbox. Finally, your third topic is going to look at the case of Brian Koberger in Idaho. And that also includes some of your own research. What role did you play in this?
Yes. No, we have used that case to look at activity level propositions, which I think is one of the next steps in the presentation of evidence. So as of now, we usually present the who left the DNA. Activity level propositions allow us to now talk about the how. How did it get there?
So how did perhaps a weapon get left at a crime scene?
And in the case of Koberger, there was DNA found on a knife sheath that was left at the scene. And so we studied, did it get there by a direct transfer, meaning he touched it? Or was it more likely that somebody else picked up his DNA and they touched it? And so we analyzed both pathways, and we actually came to the conclusion that if we see a major profile from the suspect, Koberger, it is more likely to have gotten there by a direct transfer.
Hmm. How do you develop a system to kind of look at, I guess, how DNA is transferred?
Yeah. So this took a really long time and some excellent students. We have developed an entire system where we call it our domesticated fingerprint and our domesticated hand. So these are laboratory created cousins to the wild fingerprint. So we know how much DNA is in there, and we can deposit it and transfer it across a crime scene. By having the domesticated hand, we've taken out all of the human variables. So we follow DNA across a crime scene. We mock up different crime scenes. We follow the DNA across the crime scene and quantify what's left. We run profiles and use quantification data and DNA profiles to inform what's happened.
I mean, just think about how much this has advanced and evolved in, you know, the 30 plus years. I mean, you're going back in the 90s when you needed a lot of DNA and there was still that uncertainty to, you know, within the last decade, genealogy really being this game changer. And then now you're talking about how DNA gets from one place to another, the transfer of that. So what's the next step in this, you think? What are some other big questions that still remain to be researched and answered?
We still have a lot to do in activity level in the how. There is a lot of data that needs to be generated. We have to do a lot of different studies. So we are still not there yet. We're still very much working on it. I see us in the future using massively parallel sequencing to interrogate the DNA and get even more detail. There is looking at phenotypes, that is physical characteristics based on DNA. Things like age, eye color, hair. So I think that we still have a whole lot to do, right? But that's good because that keeps people like me in business.
Mm-hmm. Finally, a lot of people are going to be going to G Street Wonder Bar tonight at 5:30 p.m. What do you hope they take away from the informal, casual conversation surrounding forensics?
Well, I hope they take away that DNA is just really cool.
It is. We all have it. Well, Professor Hall, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Ashley Hall is the director of the Forensic Science Graduate Program at UC Davis, and she's presenting at the Davis Science Cafe tonight, 5:30 p.m. at G Street Wonder Bar in Davis. So ahead, did you know that one of the oldest and biggest churches west of the Mississippi is right here in Sacramento? We'll learn more about the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.